transmission.
I think so. Yeah, that one's on the agenda.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-20-406. Transmission cost rider for Northern States Power. It is, let's check the time real quick, 1:34 p.m. on Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crosius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Christman. We also have from staff Pat Fawn, Adam Renfent, Brian Johnson, and Victor Shook. Three of them are dialed in remotely. Victor is here in person. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I don't have any opening comments either.
Commissioner Christman?
No, sir.
Okay, well, look forward to the presentation. This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. And Mr. Cedarquist, as you know, the applicant goes first and presents in this type of proceeding. But before we start, can you introduce who you have representing you today?
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner. First of all, just let me, my name is Dave Cedarquist for the record. I just want to say that we appreciate the opportunity here to present some of the key elements of our TCR rate rider. I have with me Benj Halama, who's the manager of revenue analysis. He's also our revenue requirements witness in the pending electric rate case filed a couple weeks ago. Also have with me Chris Buboltz, transmission project manager. He's making his annual TCR appearance again before you to provide information on the transmission projects. And then Matt Harris, Assistant General Counsel, is also on hand. I should say that, you know, in an effort to be as responsive as we can to your questions, we also have others on the line, a team of analysts who are, you know, instrumental in compiling the data and making the calculations to develop our proposed TCR rate. So there's a number of folks also on the line as well.
Okay.
Dave, could you repeat what Chris's
Dave, this is Randy. Could you repeat what Chris's title is?
Transmission Project Manager.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, we'll get started. I'm going to just kick things off here. As we do every year, we begin our presentation with just a brief summary of the controlling statute here. It's the Transmission Facility Cost Rate Adjustment Statute 49054.3. I won't go over all the items here other than to say that the last bullet on this slide is relevant this year because for the first time in 2021, the company intends to roll over into base rates most of the costs that we are currently recovering in the TCR rider. So that transition will occur after the conclusion of the pending rate case when final rates go into effect, hopefully late summer 2021. Benj's team will be managing that transition, and he can provide more detail on that process if you have questions as we go on today. So 2021,
Dave, really, really quick. This is Julie. So if I understood you correctly, you'll be moving the cost, a lot of these, did you say all of these projects into base rates, in which case then the only thing in this rider would be the MISO charges? Or did I take that too far?
Well, Benj can talk about this a little bit more, but we're going to be rolling everything that was in service by the end of 2020 in base rates. There will remain a few projects that are going into service in 2021. We will keep those in the rider along with, yes, the MISO REC B will remain a rider item.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Yep. Okay, so 2021 will be the seventh year that we've employed the TCR rider in North Dakota to recover transmission facility costs. We're proposing to add six new projects they're only contributing about $55,000 of revenue requirements to the total of $8.8 million that we are proposing for 2021. So not much there. We estimate that the typical residential monthly charge, TCR charge, is going to be a little over $3 per month, and that's about 61 cents more than the current TCR charge. So at this point, I'm going to hand it over to Benj. He's going to describe a little more about the development of the proposed rate and how it compares to the current charge.
Thanks, Dave. Again, my name is Benjamin Halama, and so I'll be walking through the rest of the slides for the TCR here. This slide here shows the history of the TCR rate and the revenue requirements. The rate has been relatively consistent over this time period, especially over the last couple of years. On this slide, one call out, you can see that the 2019 number is much lower than kind of the surrounding years. That has to do with TCJA, and so there was a true up in 2018 that flowed into the 2019 rate, and thus that's why that one year is much lower than the other years. If we go on to the next slide, it compares our 2020 request that we filed last year and with the rates currently in place to what we are requesting here for 2021. As Dave mentioned earlier, we have the six new projects here. Those new projects have a small impact on the increase year over year. The existing projects, same there, roughly 80,000. Not a significant change for those. The bigger changes are the next three items, and so the base rate recovery. As Dave mentioned, we filed a rate case. We're proposing to roll a number of these projects in. But as part of that process, we kind of updated both sides of it. And so, And so this adjustment in the past was reflective that in our base rates, we had an amount of cost that was being recovered. And then subsequently we requested that a project that was partially in base rates in this rider. And so we had to make an adjustment to pull that back out. However, this year, because we filed the rate case, we're using the same data for the rate case as we used for this rider application. And so we have removed all of those costs from our interim rate request. Therefore, we are now including it here in the TCR. MISO Rec B revenue credits have increased year over year, which is partially offsetting the other increases. That's largely due to, in 2020, there was a 2018 true-up in that year, again related back to TCJA, and so those components flow through here, and it's a slight offset to the year-over-year increase. And then for the true-up, in 2020, there was a amount over-recovered from 2019 that was offsetting part of the 2020 rate. However, in 2020, we under-collected by $136,000, and so that's slightly increasing our rate for 2021 and is driving the remaining difference. But again, the largest change here is the base rate component that we've adjusted because of the rate case filing. Dave, if you can move to slide six. And so on this slide here, we list out those six new projects. Again, not a significant year-over-year impact, but we identify the six new projects that we're adding to the rider here. And then on the final slide here, consistent with the past, we're providing potential implementation date scenarios. In the petition, we proposed the January 1 implementation date, but if more time is needed to evaluate this petition, we've also included what a February 1st implementation date would be and how that would impact the average customer bill. And so, as Dave mentioned earlier, we anticipate an average residential customer bill of around $3.10. If we were to implement on February 1st instead of January 1st, it would move to $3.17.
Benj, could you repeat that, what the difference would be between the 2 months, please?
Yep, and so we've shown implementation. If we implement a new rate for the TCR rider on February 1st instead of January 1st, it would increase the monthly residential bill impact from $3.10 to $3.17.
Thank you.
In that calculation, we look at the amount of collection that we would recover in the month of January using the old rate, and then calculate a new rate using the sales for the remaining 11 months of the year. And so those two things then result in that slight increase, because we're collecting a higher amount over fewer months.
Yep.
I might be missing something here, but so when the rate case occurs, if all and these projects flow into base rate, do you have a average bill impact, what that would change to? Well, let's go from the 310. If it's $3.10, would that would decrease on the rider and it would flow into base rate? Or am I missing something?
At the implementation of base rates, whatever is authorized in that outstanding or pending rate case, when that rate goes into place, at the same time, we will calculate an adjustment to reduce the rider, to bring that rider rate down.
What would that number, excuse me, what would that, do you know what that number would be on the rider, what the rider would be reduced to?
Don't have the exact amount, but it ends up being very close to, actually in this case, very close to zero. If you want to slide back to slide number 5, because we have 790,000 of MISO Rec B revenues, that actually covers most of the revenue requirements on the few projects that are placed in service in 2021, such that the rate for the TCR will go down much lower, close, I think the total revenue requirements is around $100,000.
Okay.
Are there any other questions?
For Benj specifically, or are you just ready to go to Chris now?
Well, actually, we have Chris available if you have questions about any of the projects.
But this is the end of your presentation.
Yes.
I have a couple questions too, but go ahead, Randy.
When FERC lowered the ROE from 12.38% to 10.32%, and it was appealed, who appealed that decision?
That is a good question. I'm trying to remember the various parties. I don't recall off the top of my head. I'm not sure if anybody else on the call from NSG knows who it is.
Well, do you know for sure, was NSP a participant in the case?
I think we're going to have to get back to you on that. I do not believe NSP was one of the parties that appealed it, but I don't know that for sure. I was not involved with that.
Yeah. If you can get back to us whenever you have that, both questions, exactly who the parties were, and, well, I guess from that I'll be able to tell whether NSP was one of them.
Yeah. I will state that there has been a number of appeals and then subsequent appeals, and I think FERC is actually hearing tomorrow, addressing the ROE again, and so it is kind of a constantly evolving item that FERC continues to address. But yeah, we can provide who initiated that from 12.38 down to where we are today, which I believe is 10.52.
Thank you. I don't have any other questions right now.
My question is more on the projects that are in the list. So is there a threshold for the really small projects like the 69 and 88 kV and some of those that are more of the NSP system projects? Is there a threshold when those are applied to the system as a whole versus more locally?
So all transmission projects are allocated across the entire system, across the entire NSP system.
What is the defining factor that says something is transmission versus distribution?
Chris Blubaltz. It's really the function. It's the function of the line itself and what it's serving. So, generally speaking, our transmission system is everything 69 kilovolts and above, because it doesn't serve load directly. It's transmission, right? It's moving energy between distribution substations, being transformed down into feeders that obviously go out and serve loads, right? We do have some 34.5 kV sub-transmission. Generally, most of that is in Wisconsin, but our transmission system is made up of 69 kV and higher voltage.
Okay, but it's more of a guideline than a rule. It's not saying anything 69K and above is definitely transmission, and it's not saying everything 69 and below is distribution. That's a guideline, and then how those assets are used within the system define whether it's considered as transmission or distribution. Is that roughly correct?
Yeah, and I can say with confidence we don't have anything. We don't have distribution assets that are 69 kV or greater. Our 69 kV and higher system up to 500 kV is all transmission assets.
Okay.
All right. And what about substations? Are those all part of the transmission system?
No, it's a primary. Our substations are classified by primary function, and they're classified. There's a couple ways I guess I can answer the question, and I was going to answer it from our financial standpoint, but I think you're looking more of an operational standpoint. Substations are split between distribution and transmission assets. So generally speaking, if there's more transmission high voltage equipment or a transmission transformers, again, 69 kV or above transformer in that substation, that is a transmission asset. It has a transmission function. But we have transformers that transform, say, down from 115 kV to a sub-voltage, maybe 34.5 kV, that then goes out into neighborhoods to our transformers that are, at property lines, et cetera. That would be classified as both a transmission and distribution substation, with the assets kind of split between, some of them are owned by our transmission budget organization, the assets basically on the high side of that substation are transmission assets, but the assets on the low side, so the 34.5 kV side of that transformer our distribution assets.
Okay. Victor, and when you guys are reviewing this, do you look at these, you know, the qualities of the projects within that are being proposed?
To a certain degree, I mean, we're not electrical engineers to know exactly how they're operated within the system, but it's certainly something we take a look at.
Okay.
You know, each company is, you know, treats them and separates them out a little bit differently than one mm-hmm. another. They're similar, but everything's a little bit different. So we do try to keep those kind of things in mind to make sure they're being treated fairly. A good example was the rider last year. NSP was asking for recovery of it was actually transmission voltage level investments to serve a Google data center. And we actually recommended that those costs were removed, and NSP actually agreed to take them out of the rider at that time. I don't know if you remember that whole thing, but so we do find things like that from time to time.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And if I can add an example of a project that has both transmission and distribution assets with even one of the new projects, we have this DCP Great Plains project that's being proposed for inclusion this year. That is it's a transmission and distribution substation. But the costs included in this rider are only the costs of the transmission side of that substation. We have our budget for our transmission, what it's going to take to serve that distribution half of the substation, whereas distribution then has their side of the budget where they're going to pay for their half or their side of that substation specifically, which again are not included in any of the cost calculations or revenue requirements as part of this project in the TCR.
So in that situation like that, who pays for the transformer?
The transformer, this one, I believe is a transmission transformer.
Okay, and what designates it as a transformer? You know, the transformer should take it from this voltage to that voltage, and what I would assume is in these substations, not all of them, but a lot of them, it should take it from transmission level voltage down to distribution level voltage. So in those kind of situations, I guess, is where I'm mostly asking, how do you, who pays for the transformer?
I'm looking at the number of transmission assets that are coming into this substation and positions of transmission voltage assets that we have in, so we'll have an in and an out of an existing 115 kV transmission line that runs right next to it. So those are two positions, and then the two 115 circuit breakers within that substation being transmission assets. Because the primary function and transmission has, and I would have to get back to you on how we split them. But generally, since we will have more positions within the bus and the configuration of the substation, it's going to be classified as a transmission substation. And I believe that we are going to be the owner on the high side of the transformer because of the number of positions that are required in the substation.
Sure. And I get that on a substation level, and on the one in particular you're talking about, I'm kind of speaking more generally. If you have let's say not even a 115, a 69 to 43 or less substation, the transformers within that substation, who pays for them, or are they divided between transmission and distribution?
It's gonna be one or the other, it all depends on the number of positions that each side each business area has within the substation. So if distribution has more low side breakers than transmission does, so let's say they have four low side breakers and you know, six feeders that go out of the substation, because the quote unquote primary function of that substation is a distribution substation, that transformer would then be classified as a distribution asset, and they would be the one purchasing and owning the transformer, not transmission, in that scenario.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Yes.
I don't have any more.
Pat, Adam, or Brian? Try this again. Pat, Adam, or Brian, I understand you are on the line. Do you have any questions? Pat, do you?
I have no questions. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm being
emotional. Adam, do you have any questions? Take that as a no. And then Brian, do you have any?
No questions from Brian.
Okay, thank you, sir. And I don't think we have any other questions here from the commission. Anything further you would like to add, Dave?
Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I'll just note, we got a note from our federal attorneys here. We were able to get him on the line real quick and kind of answer your question about that FERC appeal, where there's a number of FERC appeals, I guess. We, as transmission owners, so Northern States Power Minnesota, Northern States Power Wisconsin, as a group of MISO transmission owners are participating in those appeals. I don't have a full list of who all the participants in the appeals are, if we can get that for you, but we are a participant as a member of the group of transmission owners.
Okay, thanks for clarifying. I would like the full list, please.
Sure, we can get that.
Okay, well, I think we are concluded. I don't know if you were on the, if we were live when I was talking about, I know there's a second presentation, but we're going to close this proceeding before advancing to that one. So with that said, the handout, as well as the audio recording of this proceeding, is now considered evidence. Are there any objections to this evidence becoming part of the official record upon which a decision will be reached? Mr. Cedarquist?
No. No objections.
No objections from staff.
Okay, no objections from staff. Then the evidence as presented will now become a part of the official record. And I don't believe there are any other matters for this particular proceeding. So seeing none, this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you, and please bear with us for just a few minutes while the recording is stopped and a new one is begun.